T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
It's After Six. Joining us, Brent McCall. You remember Brent. He used to be the cellmate, the cellie, they call him, of Michael Leibowitz. They wrote a book called Down the Rabbit Hole, How the Culture of Corrections Encourages Crime. And that's becoming sort of the theme of this radio show, is investigating the crimes that the politicians are committing or all of government is committing all the time. If they're not illegal crimes, they're crimes against humanity. So Brent McCall joins us from prison to talk about what he sees and how corruption is the norm. So, Brent, you've got a big corruption story to tell us about?
Well, I think it's big simply because it implicates a lot of people, and I think demonstrates just how accepted corruption is in this system that's ostensibly here to rehabilitate offenders. But I'll quickly tell you a story. You know, to review very quickly, a series of events led to my transfer to Cheshire from McDougal that is related to the book and, you know, a whole host of corruption that I tried to report to the authorities for 16 months before my transfer. I told about, you know, the Department of Corrections, the state police, the auditors of public accounts, the chief state's attorney. All of this went nowhere. The only thing that changed as a result of any of this was my address. And when I got here, you know, I was originally under the assumption that the transfer was in retaliation, both for writing the book and for trying to bring this corruption to light.
And how long had you been where you were?
I was at McDougal for 14 years at that point, and I had held the same job for 11 years. And, you know, everybody was happy with my performance at that job until I stopped keeping their secrets. And then all of a sudden, I had to go.
Okay.
So I end up at Cheshire, and, you know, I find myself in the worst living conditions that I've experienced in 23 years in prison. And, you know, 4 days go by, and then the correction officer comes to my cell and says, the captain wants to talk to you. And so I go down to the captain's office. Captain James Watson is his name. And, you know, he invites me into his office, very cordial, very unusual, and sits me down and says, you know, he starts giving me the spiel about getting a job and how it's a process, and you know, you could be on the waiting list a long time. And I'm thinking, you know, why is this guy telling me all this? And then he gets down to the point, you know, for which I was there. He offers me a job immediately, better living conditions, and the pay that I was earning at Industries at McDougal, which was top pay for an inmate, if I would just write something up and sign it, saying that I had no qualms about being at Cheshire. Now, this immediately struck me as, you know, kind of crazy. Essentially, he was saying...
You have 1 minute left.
Essentially, he was saying that, you know, he was soliciting a bribe is what he was doing. And I'll call you
but,
back.
But there was no pressure on him, it sounds like, at that particular moment. Okay, yeah, give us a call back, Brent.
Okay.
The caller has hung up.
Continuing now with Brent McCall. We're hearing a terrific story that Brent is sharing from when he got moved after 14 years in McDougal Prison because he wrote the book Down the Rabbit Hole with Michael Leibowitz. This is what, a year and a half ago maybe?
December of 2017 the book came out.
Okay, so coming up on 3 years, two and a half
yeah.
years. And
yeah, but
and
I've been here
you got
2 years.
So you got to the new prison, you got to Cheshire, and this lieutenant calls you in to talk to you.
He was a captain.
Captain. Okay.
Yep.
And he's offering you a deal for something. I mean, you haven't created any pressure that would make them want to
do
this deal, have you?
I soon learned that I think there was pressure, just I didn't initially realize what the pressure was. Len Susio, who at the time was a senator in, I believe, the 13th District, had taken an interest
and is now running again. Yep.
In the book Mike and I had written, and he was very interested in what was going on in here. He really wanted the state to get criminal justice reform right, and was taking an active role in sort of approaching then Commissioner Semple about it and whatnot. So it seemed to me, I had learned over the weekend that once Senator Susio had discovered that I had been transferred, mm-hmm. there was a meeting arranged between Senator Susio and Commissioner Semple to take place on the Monday following the Friday that Captain Watson called me to his office. So I thought, well, maybe this has something to do with that. Like, they want this paper to show the senator that there's not really an issue here. You're overreacting or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
So, clearly the captain was asking me to give up something of value to him in order to influence his...
Right. He was asking you to enter into an illicit, corrupt deal to get preferential treatment in order
Absolutely.
To make his life politically better.
Absolutely. And, I asked him, where is this coming from? It's a longer story than we have time for, but, where is this coming from? And he talked about how it was talked about in the morning meeting. So apparently somebody had put him up to making this illicit offer to me, and it would seem that it was at least the warden. But then the question arises, well, how did the warden know to make this offer to me? So it must have come from the commissioner's office, I would imagine, no?
Well, hard to know.
Nonetheless, I refused the offer. I've worked too hard to try to gain some integrity. And, Mike, I knew that was going to undermine everything Mike and I did in writing the book to agree to this backdoor deal for favored treatment. So I told him, absolutely not. I'm not signing anything. That whether I stay at Cheshire or not is, up to the Department of Corrections. It's not up to me. I've never had to sign anything to stay in prison in my life. And I wasn't about to start then.
That's something they do all by themselves. They make that decision.
Oh, yeah. So they have plenty of force to make sure that happens.
But it's interesting now, the subtitle of the book, Down the Rabbit Hole, the subtitle, How the Culture of Corrections Encourages Crime. And this is the overarching theme of your writing, is it not? That if you actually want the Department of Corrections to engage in the correcting of the course of people's lives, they need to be modeling good behavior instead of modeling scuzzy behavior. And your position is that it's the latter.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly the crux of the book. And Mike and I give tons of examples of abusive authority and all kinds of things like that. But, I mean, literally, think about this. I'm sitting in an office of a guy who's charged with, ensuring my rehabilitation or at least creating the environment in which that can take place. And he's asking me to engage in this illicit backdoor deal to keep my mouth shut.
Yep.
And I'm like, is the world turned upside down or what? I mean, this is the way the mafia operates. This shouldn't be the way the government operates.
Well, there you go. So you were surprised by this, but you'd been in prison a long time. You'd never experienced, you wouldn't have suspected that the government is a mafioso-style organization?
Well, largely the corruption that I had seen in prison was not so absolutely systemic. I mean, if you think about this, it would have had to have come directly from Commissioner Semple's office. Because how else would some, you know, dote of a captain in some prison halfway across the state know to pull me into his office after I've sat idle in a run-down cage for 4 days and say, hey, I got this sweetheart deal for you. The captain didn't come up with this on his own. So what surprised me about it is
the suggestion is that this is fairly routine, right? That this was not a hard thing for them to do internally.
No, he didn't. Captain Watson didn't seem like he had any qualms at all about what he was doing. And you know, he became very frustrated with me when I, after three times him asking me, I continued to refuse to sign the paper or to write anything up. And then he essentially just threw me out of his office.
That's pretty amazing. And each time he asked, was he in some way changing the pitch? Did he throw in anything extra?
No, the deal didn't get any sweeter. I think that they pretty much thought that after 4 days in a rundown cage, I would have been willing to take anything. But I, like I said, I wasn't interested in any special treatment. I was interested in the Department of Corrections actually living its values, which is, it seems to be an impossible thing to get them to do most of the time.
Well, what makes you think the Department of Corrections values are other than what you had experienced in your years behind bars?
Well, I've read the administrative directives, and, you know, they lay out their values in there, and they're very laudable ideas. It's just that nobody really lives them. It's like you have the theory of corrections that exists independent of the actual system of corrections in America.
Yeah, so that's what you would expect, is that they have a consultant who helps them with a brochure that will outline what their official policies are, and then nobody reads it. And then there is no cause and effect that would lead to the department actually having a system of integrity in place. And everything that I hear from you and Leibowitz and other prisoners I've spoken to indicates that this is how the prisons, and by extension, I assume, the government works. I've never seen anything in government that would lead me to believe that there's anything unique about the Department of Corrections in the state of Connecticut. It just seems normal, maybe worse, because they are behind the same bars that you're behind. They have that insulation from the effects that the media might have or transparency might have.
Right. They know that it's difficult for a prisoner to get a voice in society at all. You know, I'm technically at the lowest rung of our society. So the fact that you supply this platform is absolutely amazing to me. And, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it, because it gives both Leibowitz and I an opportunity to sort of get some of this stuff out here that's just been in the shadows, has been operating in the shadows for, you know, forever and a day.
Well, my mission is the same as your mission with your book, and that is to shine light. So the appreciation goes in both directions. We're talking with Brent McCall. He's a prisoner in the Cheshire facility here in Connecticut. He's been in prison for, 25 years now?
25 years, yeah.
And his book is called Down the Rabbit Hole. So what else can you tell us about this incident, supporting situations through the years? Is this a standalone event in terms of its severity? And if so, are there others that support it that just aren't as big?
No, I don't think it's standalone in terms of its severity or uniqueness or anything like that. I often just share my personal experiences rather than what I've seen by and large, because, you know, if I'm just observing something, I can't know every aspect of what's going on. So I'm reluctant to say, you know, to make judgments about that and put that out there. But when it's happened directly to me, you know, then I feel far more comfortable saying, well, here's the truth. You judge it for, you know, for what it is.
So your generalized perception based on your personal experience with the way the prison system operates, and this is really your mission, this is what you wrote the book for and why you come on here, you want to get across to the people, I assume, that this is a system that does not behave in a way that would suggest that they actually want, when prisoners leave after 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years in prison, that those prisoners are prepared to reenter the world. And the most important thing we would ask of a Department of Corrections is that it engage in corrections. We've got some time constraints, so I'm going to have to cut this short. A good story from Brent McCall that points to exactly what the problems are in systems of power. That is when individuals use the power in ways to benefit themselves rather than using the power in the way they are charged with using the power. This is epidemic in government. That's how government operates. As soon as they win an election, they start figuring out who's getting what in order to make sure they win friends and influence people to assure their re-elections or to assure their advancement. And this is why the state of Connecticut is bankrupt. It was bankrupted by these kinds of deals, the same sort of corruption that we hear about from Brent McCall in this story. That's how it works. The challenge is to convince enough people to let go of their instincts of forgiveness, acceptance, or even just trust in their fellow man. When it comes to your fellow man, you can't trust him when he gets inside of a corrupt system. Government is inherently corrupt because they don't have to work to get the money. They don't have to take care of the customer, you, in order to keep you coming back for more. All they have to do is tell you silly stories about how much love and compassion they're filled with and how hard they're working. They're rolling up their sleeves and they're sweating, trying to make a deal to save America. No, what they're trying to do is make a deal to save their own behinds and to build their careers and to make sure their favorite special interest groups are paid off using your money. That is how it works. Shake your head and say, oh no, that's too cynical, and you're just hiding from the truth, I'm sorry to say. Okay, so that's it for this conversation with Brent McCall. We'll have him back again next week. Stay tuned for news. We've got more After 6 coming your way in just a few minutes here on WTIC. News Talk 1080.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.